Welcome, Pewter Report readers and listeners, to another edition of the Pewter Nation podcast. I'm Mark Cook, along with the boss man himself, Mr. Scott Reynolds.
Hello.
And our trusted third partner on this week's edition, intern Matt slash producer Matt.
Producer Matt, and how we doing, fellas?
I like that. Assertive. Taking charge.
Giving himself his
Owning
own title.
The title.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, we are in the midst of the off season, guys, and you know, things are a little slow right now. Although the Buccaneers did make a roster move this week, one of what we expect to be really many. There's more to come.
Oh, you mean signing kicker Philip Anderson?
No,
that was a big deal.
That was a big deal.
No.
Competition is very important.
Yeah, no. Well,
right now there's no competition.
He's the only kicker.
he's the guy.
He's the guy. He's the Bucs starting kicker at this point.
Got to start somewhere.
There was a guy from the Eagles the Buccaneers cut this week. Remember him?
Yes, Vinnie Curry.
Yes, Vinnie Curry. Saving the team $8 million. I don't think anybody was shocked about that move. I mean, it was a move that really needed to be made. Mm-hmm. Vinnie's you know, a great guy. I was on a podcast on Tuesday night, and you know, and the host was talking about Vinny and what he brought to the team. And when you look at his statistics and missing four games with injuries this year, you know, that was disappointing. The Buccaneers expected a little bit more when they signed him to that three-year deal. But at the same time, you know, good guy, good locker room guy, mm-hmm. you know, tried to help kind of change the culture a little bit around there. He and JPP, of course, Mitch Unrein didn't work out with being banged up, and Bo Allen. Those were guys that were brought in here to try and turn things around inside that locker room to a degree. And, you know, unfortunately, Vinny just didn't have the production. And I was talking to somebody, and I was wondering about this. If Carl Nassib doesn't emerge in Vinny's absence, what do the Buccaneers do then? Do they still cut him? Because
yeah, I think so. Just when you look at the production
right.
for the cap
value. 2.5 sacks?
Yeah. And it's not even the sacks. It's just the pressure that you look at. He's 31 years old as well. I think he turns 32 this year.
Yep.
They would have to draft a starting caliber defensive end, if not for the emergence of Carl Nassib. And really, by default, no fault of his own, the best thing about the Vinnie Curry situation last year was he did get hurt, and that did give Carl Nassib some playing time. It was a blessing in disguise
yeah.
because Nassib – and when you talk to Nassib, he credits Vinnie Curry and JPP for his rapid development. And you look at the Cleveland Browns, I don't think they had the veteran defensive linemen –
right.
on their roster that could have done in Cleveland for Carl Nassib what happened here in Tampa.
Certainly not the ones with the resume of Correct. JPP and Vinnie Curry.
Yeah.
And even Bo Allen, for that matter. Yeah. We know Super Bowl rings.
All that Super Bowl experience right there. And again, like you said, just huge locker room guy. But really, it comes down to you got Carl Nassib.
Yeah. And you know what? It's not going to show up at the end of the day in the record, right? The Buccaneers were 5-11. Mm-hmm. Just like they were the year before. So to the outside casual fan, you look at it and say, well, all of those things didn't really matter and didn't make a difference. I think one of the things I pointed out in last week's SR's Fab Five that really contributed, because we've heard Dirk Koetter go on the record and say, you know, talent's not the issue here in Tampa. We've heard Bruce Arians, Mark, and you
right.
and I, and you were there too, Matt, at a function at One Buccaneer Place, where he said talent is not an issue here. And I'm inclined to believe that. I think the biggest difference, the hidden factor between the 2017 Buccaneers that were 5-11 and the 2018, the Jameis Winston saga aside with his suspension
right.
and benching, was the number of penalties. The Buccaneers were a pretty disciplined football team the first 2 years under Dirk Koetter. Last year they dropped off and had a slew of penalties.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were the fourth most penalized team in the league. And first rule of football, don't beat yourself.
Right.
And the Bucs did an amazing job at that. They were really good at beating themselves last year. And I think that's where you look at the talent quotient, and if the Buccaneers aren't their own worst enemy, they win more games. I'm not saying they're going to make the playoffs in 2018.
Right.
They might have been 8-8 or 9-7 and on the outside looking in. But I think that you can go back to several games, a lot of close games, and point to where – the difference was, and it was usually a penalty or a mistake of some kind. And I think the increase in penalties offset some of the talent that was brought in guys like JPP and Vinnie Curry and Bo Allen, and at the end of the day, it didn't make a difference. But I think going forward for players like Carl Nassib to be exposed to a JPP and Vinnie Curry, it's going to help the Buccaneers in 2019 and beyond.
My first rule of football is a good center quarterback exchange.
Yep.
You got to snap the ball right.
Yeah. Well, actually, the first rule of football is show up.
Well, if you don't show up,
the best ability is availability.
That's true. If you don't show up, you automatically lose because there's a forfeit.
That's a good point.
Because all the way back to Pop Warner
football. So really, don't beat yourself is probably like the third or fourth rule of football.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And actually, now that I think about it, and that's I got that from Monty Kiffin. He told me the first rule of football was don't beat yourself. But he also said the first rule of football
is to have Derek Brooks, Warren Sapp, and
John Lynch,
and Rondae Barber.
Get a bunch of Pro Bowlers on your team and a bunch of Hall of Famers.
Guys whose names are going to be in the stadium forever.
That's the first rule of football.
That actually is the first rule of football. Now, Jason Light's trying to follow that first rule of football with the draft coming up.
All of them.
But let's talk a little bit more about what we were talking about as far as the cuts go. Vinnie Curry, first one to go. The dominoes should start to fall pretty soon.
Yeah.
DeSean Jackson, what are we saying, 75% out?
Yeah, I think so. And here's the interesting thing about DeSean Jackson, because there was some trade value at the trade deadline. Teams were inquiring about that. And I think I want to say from what I heard that they were all kind of day three picks, right? Fourth, fifth, sixth rounders. And that's not uncommon. You're not going to see a lot of blockbuster deals in season at the trade deadline. We have to keep in mind, this isn't Madden football. Jason Pierre-Paul was traded for a third-round pick.
Right.
So I think for fans that are out there that are playing Madden, DeSean Jackson is not going to fetch a day one or day two pick.
Right.
I think anything from the fourth round on would be good value for DeSean Jackson.
Golden Tate got a third, right? I think that's what the Eagles ended up.
I think so. And that was an in-season trade, I believe.
And Antonio Brown is on the market now, too,
right,
after requesting a trade. So before that, DeSean was probably the top wide receiver that was available. Now he's second.
Yeah. So there's that, and also Gerald McCoy. I think those two guys at $13 million for McCoy, $10 million for DeSean Jackson. I think the Buccaneers, before cutting them, they're going to explore some trade value things. And we all know where that happens. It happens at the Combine. That's where Jason Light talked with Dave Gettleman last year with the Giants and kind of started to sow the
wheels
seeds
in motion on that one.
Right, for that JPP trade. So I would expect early March you might see that happen. The Buccaneers, with Mike Greenberg running the salary cap and Jason Light running the front office, they've kind of been known as a cut-as-you-go kind of team. It's not like they need $40 million in cap room right now. Free agency doesn't start for another 3 or 4 weeks. So, yes, they have some guys that they have to re-sign. Donovan Smith, I think they're going to make offers to Adam Humphries and Quan Alexander.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't need all that cap room right now. And so I think they're going to wait and see if they can get something for McCoy, something for DeSean Jackson. And then if not, then they might part ways with them in March. But I don't think it's going to happen here. I think that they needed some cap room.
Right.
They achieved that with Vinnie Curry. Other guys, though, I think that don't have much trade value or any trade value at all. I think Bo Allen is a player that you look at the production and you look at the switch to this 3-4 defense.
Mm-hmm.
And you could make an argument, well, he could be a nose tackle, but at $5 million for not having much pass rush ability at all.
Yeah, he could be expendable here.
Yeah, with Vita Vea in your back pocket, too.
Yes, yeah. And I think they've seen enough from Vita. And Vita's the kind of guy, and I was talking to Jimmy Lake, the defensive coordinator for the Washington Huskies, and had a conversation with him because the Buccaneers are going to be playing some 3-4 under, which to the naked eye will resemble a 4-3. But at times you will see that true three-man front. But Jimmy Lake played a lot of 4-3 and 3-4. It was a very flex defense for the Washington Huskies. And he said Vita Vea played 3-tech. He also played 1-tech. And that was in a 4-3 and a 3-4. So there is some position flexibility for Vita Vea. He's not just going to be stuck at the nose in a 3-4. The Buccaneers, that's not going to preclude them from having another nose tackle, more of a guy that's going to be a point of attack guy, because they like the mobility and the speed and quickness that Vita Vea has. And they can move him to a 3-tech like an Aaron Donald in a 3-4 defense, which is still in the B-gap outside the shading of the guard shoulder. Still put him there and have him be effective as a 3-tech as opposed to a nose.
Right. All right, so, you know, those are the guys that we expect to – something's going to happen. I mean, Deshaun's probably going to go. Gerald, that's going to be an interesting situation if they're going to be able to make a trade for him. I just don't know that if I'm a GM out there, especially if you know the Buccaneers are in the salary crunch they are, you know, what are you really giving up for him? Now, if somebody is willing to take that $13 million off the books for the team – even for a fifth or sixth round pick, you got to do it if you're planning on cutting the guy anyway.
Yeah.
We don't know. Todd Bowles may have looked at the defense of the film and said, we got to keep this guy.
Yeah.
You know, and they can.
Right.
It is a possibility. It's not a foregone conclusion that Gerald McCoy is gone. Looking at other guys that they want to bring back, and we've already talked about Donovan Smith. We've already, he's going to be back.
Yep.
Most likely is the franchise tag. $14 million, roughly.
I wouldn't be shocked if they did an extension.
Yeah.
You know, I wrote about both scenarios in my Fab Five on Friday. Wouldn't be shocked if they looked at the long term. And that's not just with Donovan. That's looking at this year's free agent class, which is very shallow outside of Trent Brown, who I'm assuming is going to stay.
No, they're saying now he's only about a 25% chance he stays.
Okay.
So he becomes the top free
agent. He's the guy.
If Donovan.
That's the big fish.
Right now, Donovan is the top free agent tackle on the board in most people's, even more so than Brown.
Yeah.
So if Donovan ends up sticking with the Buccaneers, then it does move to Brown. And we do think he's going to stay there. But, you know, the big thing is that you start looking at it when you're trying to save money. The Buccaneers could save a couple million dollars a year by doing the long-term extension. But you've got to really believe that he's going to be your guy for the next 4 or 5 years, though, to be willing to pony up that money, because there's going to be a lot of guaranteed money in those first couple years.
And the draft, there's no, you know, Matt, you and I were looking at the 2015 draft class, going back at it. And I think there was three or four tackles picked ahead of Donovan Smith. Donovan was a high second-round pick. I think there was three guys picked, maybe four, in the first round. And Donovan Smith is clearly the best left tackle in that draft class, looking back right now.
It wasn't even close. I believe you said one of them was Ereck Flowers, who was on the Giants. I believe he got signed by Jacksonville now.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if you know anything about Ereck Flowers, that was just...
He was a former first-round pick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his production, you look at Donovan's production.
And then Rob Havenstein from the Rams was there, but he's a right tackle. So that's not exactly... It's fruit, but it's not apples and oranges. Or actually, it is apples and oranges. It's not apple to apples. But when you look at this year's draft class, it's light at the left tackle position. I think there's some really intriguing right tackle candidates. But then even some of the right tackle candidates, they're projecting inside, you know, to guard. And sometimes that happens. Brandon Scherff was the top-rated and top-picked first round guy from the offensive line category in 2015.
He was
out of Iowa, left tackle at Iowa. The Redskins moved him inside because he didn't have the ideal measurables. And Brandon Scherff reminded me an awful lot of Logan Mankins, who I loved at Fresno State and back in the day, but he was a left tackle. And what the Patriots do, draft him at the end of the first round, moved him inside to guard. That might happen with a guy like Kansas State's Dalton Risner. You know, there's a lot of right tackles that could get moved inside to guard because they just don't have the ideal measurables to play, on the edge. So looking at free agency, looking at this year's draft class, and you really can't predict with the crystal ball what the draft class is going to look like at left tackle 2 years from now, much less where the Bucs are going to be picking. So you can't really bank on that. So you do have to roll the dice, cross your fingers sometimes, and sign players, and hopefully they end up panning out. And sometimes it happens. And I remember Donald Penn. There was some questions about him, and I think Donald Penn was a pretty good left tackle during his time in Tampa Bay after that contract extension. Then, you know, you pinch your nose and breathe in and cross your fingers with a guy like Doug Martin, and it comes back to bite you. And the evidence suggests that Martin, coming off a 1,400-yard season, Pro Bowl-caliber season with Dirk Koetter in his first year in the offense, got to re-sign him. And all of the indicators said that was the case. They did, and it came back to bite the Bucs. So you don't know.
How much concern would you put on Donovan for that, where if he gets that extension, he gets his money, now he's like, all right, I got paid. Maybe he's not as motivated as he once was. Because you saw sometimes during the season where he'd be blocking on a play, and then maybe the play wasn't to his side, or the play got extended and he didn't know, and he kind of just stopped and let the guy kept running.
Donovan Smith, I don't think, can be described as an overachiever.
No.
Right?
I mean, look, he was in a contract year this year and had his worst year.
Sacks, knowing that.
6.5 sacks. So, I mean, that is a concern there. I think I would guess that the Buccaneers feel like, worst case scenario, he plays like he did last year.
Yeah.
Worst case scenario, that's the Donovan Smith that you have.
Mm-hmm.
Best case scenario is he's going to get coached up. I don't know that Donovan Smith's going to be able to play like he did last year and continue to start under a guy like Bruce Arians.
Agreed.
And I've been watching the All or Nothing thing too, Scott.
So have I.
Yeah. And, you know, it just doesn't appear to – that's, you know, he's not going to put up with it. I know one thing, Bruce Arians is not going to stand at the podium and make excuses for Donovan Smith
that's
like
right.
Dirk Cutter did.
That's right.
Dirk Cutter just would not throw guys under the bus. And I can appreciate that and respect that to a degree. But the bottom line is Dirk Cutter's not here anymore
right.
because some players mm-hmm. didn't perform as well as they should yeah. have or could have. And, you know, he kind of took the fall and fell on the sword for mm-hmm. those guys a little bit.
If you watch the All or Nothing series, and Bucks fans, you got to watch it. It's so
awesome.
Insightful.
It's awesome. On like the fourth or fifth episode.
Yeah.
It's
right
on
now.
Amazon Prime.
Yep. It's
you can
so
get a free 30-day trial. That's what I did. I just got to make sure to watch it within 30 days.
Yeah, and it's hard not to keep wanting to watch the next one because it's so good.
Yeah,
Bruce is in there a lot. Harold Goodwin, mm-hmm. Kevin Ross, the cornerbacks coach.
Mm-hmm. Brett Buckner's in there a lot.
Yeah.
I know he's not with the Bucs anymore, but
exactly a lot of Buck in there. But the thing with Bruce that he's big on is the player-to-player accountability. He asks his players to kind of sheriff and marshal their peers, and that's kind of why I wrote that open letter to Ali Marpet at the end of the season. It's like, Ali, you're a captain now,
mm-hmm.
and I know you're a young guy. And the problem is you're best friends with Donovan Smith. You do a Buccaneers podcast with him, and you room with him in training camp, you know. But the thing is, you have a C in your chest, and that means something.
Cook.
No, it doesn't mean cook. It means captain.
I have a C in my chest.
Well, if you had you have two Cs, like Captain Cook.
Yeah,
but then you'd really be a pirate. All you'd need is the eye patch. Skip the surgery and go for the eye
coming.
Patch.
That's coming, yeah. possibly.
So, to me, when you look at Donovan Smith, Ali Marpet is going to have to do something that he may feel uncomfortable with, which is get into Donovan's face and hold him accountable.
It's never going to happen.
It needs
it's
to.
It's never going
to.
I agree. I completely agree.
It needs
agree.
To. If you're a team captain.
If you're a team captain, yeah. you know, the buck stops here.
And
look,
you know who's
going
to tell him to
close.
Do that? Two people.
Yeah.
Harold Goodwin. And Bruce Arians,
yeah.
and they're going to say, whether you like it or not, Ali, that C on your chest was
yeah.
given to you by your teammates,
yep.
and this is what's expected of you, and this is what you need to go do. You need to hold Donovan Smith accountable, and not just Donovan, Ryan Jensen, or whoever else is on the offensive mm-hmm. line. And as these players mature and grow up, and they're not young players anymore, they're seasoned veterans,
mm-hmm.
that's going to have to be the role. And that happens on great teams. That happens on Super Bowl winning teams. Warren Sapp ran the Bucs locker room with an iron fist.
Literally.
Yeah, he did.
He literally fought guys in the locker room.
He did. Yes.
Got to get the message across.
Yeah, and it's like Derrick Brooks was the godfather, and he was well-respected and revered.
Right.
Make no mistake, that was Warren Sapp's locker room.
He
ruled it with an iron
Absolutely.
Fist. And the great teams have that player-to-player accountability.
Half
and
that defense didn't like Warren Sapp. I'd say half. I
half
mean,
the locker room didn't,
yeah,
like, Warren
didn't
Sapp.
Like Warren Sapp.
But they respected him.
Absolutely.
You know why?
Because
he
they
busted
were
his ass every single practice, every single workout, every single off-season thing, and for 3 hours on Sunday.
Yeah.
Scott and I used to sit up in the press box when it was Buccaneer Magazine, and I was you back then, essentially. Without the writing
Piss
ability.
Piss gopher intern.
And had no idea how to run a...
But you didn't have the looks.
Didn't even know what a podcast was. Oh, I had the looks. Make no mistake. I was a player then, player now at 48. Now, it is what it is. I don't get mistaken for Bradley Cooper by accident. So, but Scott and I used to sit up in the locker, I mean up in the press box, and we'd be like, oh, God, who's going to interview Warren Sapp? Especially after a loss. We
oh,
would
yeah.
draw straws, essentially.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Play a little rock, paper, scissors, because we knew it was not going to be a comfortable thing because Warren was as big an ass
hated
to us.
Losing.
Yeah.
Hated
and,
losing.
And Scott, I think it was you, Scott, who said this. You know, Warren Sapp is the biggest jerk in the world, but he's this team's big jerk, and for 3 hours every Sunday, there's nobody that I want on the field more than Warren
Sapp.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. My saying back in the day was Warren Sapp's an asshole.
Yeah.
And you can have him Monday through Saturday,
yeah.
and I'll take him every Sunday.
Yeah.
For that reason, he was the fire starter at one Buccaneer place.
Remember we'd come out through the tunnel during warm-ups and just kick the pylon?
Yeah.
Go walk on the
no
other
reason.
Team's
yeah.
sideline.
Yeah.
I mean, that was part of that Miami 80s bravado that they had, right? And, you know, late 80s, early 90s when Miami was actually a good football program. 38th ranked recruiting class. Florida State
pissed
15th.
Off Rick Zoyce right there.
There you go, Rick.
Yeah.
But, you know, look, you know, but that's not Ali Marpet. And there's really nobody, I don't know, there's a reason Warren Sapp is a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
They don't make many Warren Sapps.
Right.
You know what I mean? Not just from a physical standpoint, from a mental makeup.
And
Ali
Marpet doesn't have to be Warren Sapp. He just got to hold his guys in his room and on the offense accountable.
Yeah.
And so does Jameis Winston and Mike Evans and whoever else has the C on their chest. That's going to be
Adarius
more meaningful.
Taylor. Technically had a C in his
technically
chest.
Technically he did. You're right. Yeah.
He should go to Donovan Smith.
Yes. Somebody should.
Somebody's got
listen,
to.
Listen,
nobody. That was a problem. Nobody did last
nobody
year.
Nobody did, yes.
Not Dirk Koetter.
Right.
Not, I don't know that George Warhop did. And maybe he did.
Maybe
I think George Warhop's message was just done, was
right.
flat, right? When you have a guy, and George Warhop was a loud guy and a grumpy guy and a mm-hmm. yeller and a screamer. Guy, you know, those things tend to be effective initially and then flame out, that type
right.
of personality. So, you know, Donovan's going to hear it from somebody else. He's going to get a different, you know, different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
He's only had one offensive line coach
that's
in
right.
the NFL, and it's been Donovan Smith. Whereas Warren Sapp, I mean, not Warren Sapp, Gerald McCoy's had how many defensive line coaches?
I can't even remember.
I mean,
remember
he'll tell you real quick.
Yeah.
It's like 10 or 11 or some obscene amount of,
yeah,
it's crazy when you account for the assistants that have been there too. But all right, so
you've got an interesting article on PewterReport.com about Adam Humphries.
Yeah.
Okay. So
former Buccaneer Adam Humphries.
Yeah, you
Ooh.
Think he's gone?
He's gone.
Let's talk about it.
He's gone. I mean,
I'm not disagreeing with you, by the way. I think there's a chance he comes back because I think there's a part of this organization that really wants to give Jameis all of the opportunities
mm-hmm.
to shine this year and step up in the first year of Arians and be the guy.
And Adam is one of his guys.
Adam's one of his guys. He is the go-to guy.
Well,
before Jameis Winston.
Before we talk about Adam, what we've got to do is I've figured out how we can make Donovan Smith a better football player.
How?
Get these five guys on a boat, on the water, and fish.
Okay.
Fishing is a way to bring people together.
It's relaxing.
People of all cultures, races, personalities, anything. Fishing is a way to do it.
Sizes. You could be a little kid or you could be like a big, huge, massive left tackle.
That's right. And listen, now I will say this. If you're going to have five offensive linemen on your boat,
yeah.
you better make sure your boat is very seaworthy.
Yes.
Because that's probably 1,500 pounds you're looking at right
yeah.
there.
And you need a flare gun in case the ship goes
down.
That's right. Where can I get a flare gun, Mark?
Well, there's a good place over in Tampa that I've been looking for flare guns for years. Finally found one at T.A. Mahoney's.
Excellent.
Yep. T.A. Mahoney's are located at 50th Street in Atomo. They've been in business since 1940. They've been selling flare guns for 70 years.
Wow.
Now, the original first flare gun was actually just a slingshot that you would light a piece of paper on fire and shoot it up in the air. But it was technically a flare gun. So.
And it would kind of flame out pretty quickly.
Yeah. It'd get like 4 feet off the ground. You know, so hopefully somebody was right next to you as your boat was sinking or they would have never seen the flare. But they do have flare guns that will actually shoot up and be able to be seen for a long
ways. One of these days,
ways.
Matt, I'm going to bring a flare gun to the podcast.
I'm going to pull it out.
New article, Matt, Peter Report.
If you see him bring a flare gun, I want you to take him to the ground, okay? You're not only the producer slash intern, you're also our sergeant of arms here at Peter Report.
Flare gun! Get down!
All right, flare guns, fishing rods, hooks, lines, sinkers, anything you need for
the
your fishing
expertise
news.
To make sure that your boat is seaworthy.
And it's got to be seaworthy because you don't want to get tickets, and they will give you tickets out on the water. You got to have the right amount of flotation devices, sound-making devices, all types of things. T.A. Mahoney's can outfit your boat from top to bottom to make sure it's ready to go, including all of the accessories you need to have a great day out on the water. TAMahoney's.com, TAMahoney.com on the interwebs. And, again, as I mentioned, 50th Street in Atomo. Go check them out and let them know that Peter Report sent you. And thank them for being a one-year sponsor of the Peter
yeah.
Nation podcast.
Excellent. We appreciate that.
All right.
Back to Adam Humphries.
He's a goner.
Okay.
Adam Humphries is going to be catching balls from Baker Mayfield and Todd Monken up in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm, I like that.
He may be catching passes from Cam Newton, who's going to switch to his left arm, potentially.
Yeah.
And which is still better than what they had.
That'll be a homecoming for Adam Humphries.
Yeah,
yeah, back home. You know, there's a lot of possibilities for Adam Humphries. There's a lot of teams, and I just started choking for no reason.
Yeah, I'm going to save you there because when you look at the hierarchy, Matt and Mark, when it comes to the Bucs' targets, right? Like if you're Bruce Arians and you're Byron Leftwich and you're putting together the game plan, not just for one game but for the entire season, who's going to get the most targets? Starts with Mike Evans
yep.
at the top. He's your money man. He's your Pro Bowler. That's the guy.
Alternate.
Number two, I think you're looking at
Bubba Wilson.
No, he's down the list a little bit.
Justin
Florida
Watson.
State guy, though.
Yeah, but I think he's down the list a little bit.
Mm, okay.
So you're looking at Chris Godwin, because I'm projecting DeSean Jackson not on this team
right,
this year.
Right.
I think he's gone. So Chris Godwin is your other starting wide receiver. I think there's him and O.J. Howard, or kind of like in that second slot behind mm-hmm. Mike Evans. So that's essentially two and three, however you want to look at it. Then you're looking at Cam Brait is making $7 million.
Yeah.
And Jason Light and the Glaziers are going to be looking at you saying, well, where's our $7 million man in this equation?
Mm-hmm.
And Buck fans might, again, the Madden players out there, we'll just trade him. Okay, well, O.J. Howard has yet to play full 16 games.
And
the
years,
drop-off
yep.
from O.J. Howard is Anthony Autler without Cam Brait. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden, you lose the tight end passing game if you only have O.J. Howard and he gets hurt, as
right.
he has done the last 2 years ending those seasons on IR. So factoring Cam Brait for this year, you're looking at Cam Brait and Adam Humphries on that third tier.
Right.
And that's slots four and five. So Adam Humphries at best is your fourth, at worst is your fifth. How much are you going to pay for that spot?
Well, I mean, reports are, and I talked to somebody a couple months ago, well, right after the season ended, so it hadn't been a couple months, about Adam, about how much money they expect him to get. And they told me they approached Adam last year, and his camp was asking for $8 million. That was a starting point. And so, I mean, I kind of laughed when they said that. This person, obviously, they kind of laughed when that was said as well. Guess what? This is not a very good free agent receiver market.
Yeah.
And $8 million may not be a terrible deal. I mean,
right
now the Eagles are considering paying Nelson Aguilar his 9.8 that they're owed. They may cut him.
Yeah.
9.8 for Nelson Aguilar. I mean, so Adam Humphries is a guy.
It's not out of the realm of possibility.
No,
and
it takes is one or two
That's
teams
right.
to throw crazy money at him, and I think somebody's going to do that. I mean, I think the consensus is he's one of the top four free agent wide receivers out there, and in my story, you know, I listed some of the guys that are out there, and there are a lot of older guys, 31, 32, 33-year-old receivers.
Yeah. And this is not an overly talented wide receiver crop in this draft.
That's true.
You know, there's – you know, there's talk about Metcalf from Ole Miss.
Right.
He's got a history riddled with injuries,
right.
but he is a great specimen and a fantastic receiver when healthy. You got Harry from Arizona State. There isn't a lot of surefire guys that make you jump up and down
this
about the wide receiver class.
This isn't – what year was Mike Evans drafted?
2014.
This
isn't
not
Sammy Watkins
and
Brandon Cooks.
Right.
You know,
Mike
OJ
draft.
Or OBJ,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah, this is far from that draft class. And, you know, I just don't – again, I love Adam.
Mm-hmm.
Great guy. Always been willing to do anything we need a Pewter Report as far as our charity functions, our bowling
just
events.
Just talking to the media.
And things like
fantastic.
That. Just a good guy.
Yeah.
And in the story I put in there, this guy's story, right, should be passed out to every youth football player, high school football player.
It's Rudy.
He's a guy.
It's Rudy.
It's Rudy, right? Except he wasn't offsides like Rudy was.
Correct.
But bottom line is, Adam Humphries is a guy that was signed as just, you know, hey, can you let him try out for the team, the agent, you know, kind of a favor. All right, yeah, come on out here. And he impressed enough. All right, well, you know, we'll use him as a camp body. All he did was just keep getting better and better every day. And all he's done is getting better and better every season if you look at his statistics. But his best season was last year with 71 receptions for 816 yards, something like that, mm-hmm. and five touchdowns, 10.7 yards a reception.
I think he's bumping the ceiling.
He is a possession receiver when you're talking 10.5 yards, you know, per reception. And I just don't know that. God, Ike Hilliard is not dead yet. I was going to say he's rolling in his grave right now. But think about some of the Buccaneer receivers that were possession receivers. I mean, Keyshawn Johnson never made anywhere near $8 million a year, right?
Yeah, I mean, Keyshawn at one point was the highest paid wide receiver
but
in the league.
But I still don't know. But again,
that was
12 years ago.
2001.
You know, I mean, I remember when they signed Alvin Harper, and I think they signed him for like $4 million a year or something like that. And
Bert Emanuel,
you know,
was another one.
And, but I mean, but these were guys that were, you know, big time receivers
I think at 5'10", 195 pounds, I think Adam's limited. I don't think he is an outside wide receiver.
Absolutely
right?
not.
You know, he's not that kind of guy. So you're relegated to playing him in the slot, and then are you going to have, maybe in this day and age, there are more teams that go three wide receivers,
right.
but are you Are you dedicated to having three wides on the field all the time and having him be your slot receiver? And, you know, I don't think he's as good as Julian Edelman.
No.
Well, yeah, you know? when I see him, you know, you got to balance, one, everything you said about he's a great locker room guy, he's got all the heart, hustle, and that stuff is important. You can't put that into statistics and things like that. But how much of a downgrade, like, if he gets a replacement, how much of a downgrade is that going to be? Because when I look at Adam Humphries, he's super important. There's no denying that. But I see him, like, as you said, he's not as good as Julian Edelman. I see him as, like,
in terms of separation.
Yeah, what Cole Beasley does,
right?
You know, for the Cowboys. Can that be replaced with, who knows, maybe they'll draft, like, Hunter Renfrow, another Clemson guy. Or, you know, maybe they give Justin Watson a shot. I'm not saying he's going to get bumped up to the three, but I think there's cheaper cost to get a similar production that you got from
and
Adam
Bubba Wilson, if he can be more reliable with his hands, I think he certainly has more speed.
Yeah.
And I think that he can play a little bit more outside than Adam on a regular basis and inside the slot. So I agree. I think that the cost for replacing Adam in terms of finding somebody else in free agency or a draft pick is certainly a lot more manageable than it is if you swallow hard and have to pay him $8 million a year, which I don't think the Buccaneers are going to do.
We were a little surprised that Cam Brake got the money that he did, but you can easily make a case that he was more valuable to this football team when he got his extension.
Yeah.
You know, than Adam is.
Right.
You know, he was the number two tight end, probably the number one red zone threat. Adam is not even really a red zone threat at all.
Correct.
You know, I mean, he had a career high.
Five touchdowns
last
year.
And that was a career high this year. So,
All right, so you mentioned Cam.
Mm-hmm.
Cam is making $7 million right now as the backup tight end. And the only reason he's making more is because he hit free agency sooner than O.J. Howard did.
Mm-hmm.
And when O.J.'s contract comes up, and if he continues to play at a very high level, Cam's not going
to
be here.
By the way, make sure to read Trevor's cover 3 on O.J. Howard.
Very well done.
This week.
Very well
You know,
done.
I agree with Trevor, too. This guy, and again, let's see how Bruce Arians decides to utilize this guy, but he's not just a tight end. I mean, he's just a freak.
A weapon.
Yeah, he is. And the fact that he wasn't used more the last 2 years, and he's had, you know, nice production. The fact that he wasn't used more is really almost criminal in a sense.
Sure.
With his ability and his talent.
Yep.
I remember when Trevor was evaluating him before he was even drafted, he made a good point. He said, this guy comes out of his break, hand in the ground, and into his route faster than some wide receivers who are split wide, who aren't bent over with their hand on the ground.
That's right.
I mean, that's how quick he gets into the pass pattern.
Yeah,
and
he weighs 35 more pounds than Mike Evans and ran a 4.53 at the combine. And Mike Evans ran a 4.54 at the combine. So, I mean, that's
the guy is that there's he is a mismatch against virtually any linebacker or safety in the league. He really is.
Yeah.
If it's, you know, if it's single coverage, he should be able to beat that at all times. And we know the way Jameis Winston had in Tallahassee with Nick O'Leary, the relationship with tight ends, the way he's been with Cam Brate before OJ got here. You know, these two are only going to get better and become more of a more prolific and deadly combination in the red zone, I think.
So you look at Cam, if I'm Jason Light or Mike Greenberg, I mean, I'm going to Cam.
I know what you're saying.
I'm going to Cam, and I'm going to say, listen, I know that you live with Adam, and you guys are like best friends and all this, and you know, how much is it worth for you continuing to play a ball with your bro? I'm just saying, you're making $7 million. Cam, you know, we're in a cap crunch this year. You know, I know you had an injury last year. Your hip was bothering you, but I just wonder, like, can we get some of that $7 million and give to Adam?
Yeah, I don't think Cam's going to do that. I don't think Cam's going to do that. Now, if they say we're going to cut you, but I don't even think they could do that because it's the second year of the deal. He's got guaranteed money this year. Yeah. So
I don't think they would cut Cam.
What would they do? They have to renegotiate his deal?
Yeah.
Or are you just asking?
We want you to take a pay cut.
No, what you're asking Cam to do is to go to the bank on Mondays
and give Adam Humphries $1 million.
Yeah, just deduct a couple hundred thousand each week and hand him Adam
Humphries.
That's
exactly right.
Okay, well,
that's what you do
for tax purposes. That might work well.
You can pay a little more in rent.
There you go. Now we're talking, Matt. See,
Even it out one way or another.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Cam's building a big, nice house in South Tampa, and as far as I know, he's moving in Griffin and Ryan into the house too.
And Adam,
do some lawn work or something like that.
There you go.
Plant some flowers.
Yeah, no, I don't know that Cam does that, but
I'm just saying if you're the Buccaneers and you have to look at all of your leverageable situations, this is one of those you approach because I don't know this year, given Cam's production last year and what the plans are with O.J. Howard moving forward. I know you wanted to keep Cam, and you did, and Cam made a big chunk of money last year, right? But if this year, is Cam worth $7 million?
What is Cam's guaranteed money this year? I have to look at that.
None. They could cut him right now or trade him right now, and all the only guarantee was the first year.
You know, we were talking earlier about
that's why
you don't want to lose. You know, Cam Brate because O.J. Howard hasn't been able to stay healthy, and then you're down to Anthony Auclair. Right. But Bruce Arians isn't a big tight end guy, right? His offense doesn't have a lot of production from the tight end position. You start wondering if they do get into more of a cap crunch, depending on what they do with Kwan and if they do want to keep Adam. Geez, you wonder maybe if he does become a little expendable.
Yeah, I
like the idea of Bo Allen more. Okay, there's $5 million right there. I'd rather get rid of Bo Allen than Cam Brate. Certainly.
Yeah, I would too. Yeah, but I think the other thing too, and I'm touching on this on my Fab Five, and I want your guys to chime in on this as well. In watching the All or Nothing, I don't know if you've gotten to the part where when Bruce got to Arizona, he took Larry Fitzgerald, who was a big time outside wide receiver, and he put him on the inside in the slot. And as I'm reading his book, The Quarterback Whisperer, the main guy is, or I should say, the main throw that quarterbacks have to make in his offense and his favorite play call is the seam. It's sending three guys deep and having that quarterback hit the seam. Mm-hmm. And that seam's not always a tight end. Now, there will be times it will be, and that's where O.J. Howard's going to make his money. But when you're in a three-wide set, that seam guy is the slot guy. And it took Larry Fitzgerald a little while to kind of buy into that notion of, hey, right, I want you in the slot as our seam guy because we want you to be able to block and do some of the dirty work to help our ground game. But also, too, you're going to be creating some mismatches. Right. Instead of going against the top cornerback, you're going to be going up against safeties or linebackers, and that's a favorable matchup. And Larry Fitzgerald made Pro Bowls playing that way under Arians and put up big-time numbers. Actually, career numbers under Arians inside. So back to Humphreys for a second. I don't know that the slot role position in Dirk Cutter's offense is going to be the same or have the same value as it is in Bruce Arians. I think in Arians' system, it actually has more value. And I think that if Arians and Byron Leftwich are looking for a Larry Fitzgerald type to play inside, that's not Adam Humphreys. That's actually Chris Godwin.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be Mike Evans, but I think you want his size on the outside for this matchup.
He's too valuable outside.
Right, he is.
But at this point in his career.
Yeah. But Chris Godwin, who's a damn good blocker.
Tough as nails,
and has the speed to work inside. I think that, and you're saying that they might let Adam Humphries go. I don't know what the magic number is. That would be so much easier, right, if the Buccaneers told us it's $6 million and anything above that, bye-bye, Adam. And it very well could be. Six and a half, something like that. But I just have to wonder if they look at it and say Adam Humphries really is not an ideal fit. We could make him work, but for the money we have to pay him, are we better off moving Chris Godwin inside, having Justin Watson or drafting another wide receiver to play outside opposite Mike Evans and having Chris Godwin be the guy inside?
Yeah, no, that's an interesting possibility, and you're right. I think Godwin certainly is a better fit there when you look at what they did in Arizona with Larry Fitzgerald, because I think they're kind of similar size and physical guys. Mm-hmm. That does make some sense there. I'm not a big off-season guy, you know, mini camps and all, you know, shoot me. The first few are kind of nice, but they get a little monotonous and tiring and hot.
Let's face it.
I'm excited this year, though.
I am too. Yeah,
because there's so many unknowns.
Yeah,
what the defense is going to look like, what they're going to do offensively. We're going to be able to see all that stuff.
Yeah.
Coming up pretty soon. Right after the draft with that first.
Before they're going to have the mini camp before the draft.
Right, voluntary mini camp. So you know we're going to be able to see these guys on the field and kind of get an idea of what's going on. Yeah. So I'm actually really looking forward to this offseason workouts.
And listen, it's not that the Mark doesn't like football. You do. It's just I'm with you. It's like after 2-3 OTAs, you're jonesing to see the guys in pads.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it's such a tease.
Yeah,
is what
it's like
it
flag football.
You know, they can't tackle. They're not hitting anything. Right. There's no physicality at all. Yeah, yeah. it's it's very frustrating. Yeah, you know,
just show me the receivers in the corners. Let them go right. 7-on-7, stuff like that.
Yeah. You know, but this,
this year we're gonna have two practices to watch simultaneously. Yeah. You're gonna be reporting from the veterans. I'll be looking at the rookies, and we'll switch it up and mix it up. Yeah.
Yeah. No, there's gonna be a lot to see, and a lot's gonna be revealed. Right now, we just don't know. But that's an interesting scenario there with Godwin moving to the inside. You know, we'll see what they do with Adam. But I mean, the more I think about it, the more I look, when I keep seeing those numbers that receivers are expected to get in free agency this year, and you start looking at the class that's in there, you know, Adam, you know, we talk about him being the fourth, fifth option potentially on this football team.
Yeah.
There's certainly teams where he could be the first or second option, just depending on the style of offense they run.
No, you don't want him as your number one.
Not necessarily your number one guy, but Edelman's the number one guy. I mean, Gronk technically is the number one guy in New England, but Edelman, when it's not Gronk, it's Edelman.
Yeah.
And, you know, he has, you know, some similarities there. Obviously, you know, size
short,
wise and things
white.
Like that. Yeah. Like, didn't necessarily want to mention the white part.
First one in, last one out.
I was going to mention his quickness and all that.
Gritty
but,
player.
You know, doesn't drop the ball, good hands, all that
good
stuff.
Locker room.
You know, Adam doesn't needs to grow complain. A beard, though. Yeah, all that stuff. But anyway. All right, guys. That pretty much wraps it up, man.
We got to head to Ford's, man.
We got to go to Ford's?
We got to go to Ford's.
We're only about 5 minutes. No, you're about 10 minutes away.
Yeah.
That's not bad. I'm only about 10 minutes away from my house, too. How far are you away?
25 minutes.
That's not far. You know what? If you're within an hour, it's worth driving to Ford's.
Absolutely.
Because, and the good news is, if you're listening to the podcast, chances are you're within an hour of a Ford's garage because they have multiple locations. And, you know, they're in St. Pete, Clearwater. They're in West Chase. They're in Wesley Chapel, Brandon, Orlando and Lakeland now.
Yep.
So they are all over Central Florida. You're within an hour, most likely, of a Ford's Garage restaurant. You definitely want to go check them out for all of your – you know, when I like going to Ford's, people are big Lightning fans. Scott, you're a big Lightning fan. I actually went Thursday to my first game this year. Boy, this Lightning team that's so high scoring, it was 0-0 after three periods.
Did you go to the Blues game?
Yeah.
Oh, man,
it was a really good game, though. It was really exciting. Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, missed chances and, you know, hitting the cross, what do you call the pipes? What do you call
the
that?
Pipes. Yeah.
Yeah, pipes. Pipe crossbar.
It was a really exciting game, in my opinion. But anyway, bottom line is they're huge Lightning fans over there, too. Football season's over. They've got huge TVs all over this place. It's a great place to go check out a Lightning game.
Kansas State basketball, who won their ninth straight Big 12 game last night.
No, nobody's going to Ford's for Kansas State.
Here's a little side note. You know what was interesting?
What?
Kansas State goes down to Texas last night, and they beat the Longhorns. The Longhorns had beat them earlier in this year when we didn't have Dean Wade and Cam Stokes, our star players. And Barry Brown, the pride of St. Pete, Gibbs High School, 727 shout-out, had a nice dunk to help finish off the Jackson Hayes-led Texas Longhorns. Jackson Hayes is their star center, son of former Bucks defensive line coach.
No.
Jay Hayes.
No.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, small world.
Interesting.
Right?
You brought a full circle there.
I
back
did.
To the back. Had no idea where that was going. But anyway, you can go check out Jackson Hayes if you want to go watch some college basketball, right?
Hey, Slick.
Yeah, hey, Slick. Go check it out at Ford's Garage. Multiple locations, great TVs, great food and drink menus. They've been a sponsor of this podcast since we started. We're really proud to be a partner with them. Very big in the community as well. But go check them out. Watch a Lightning game. Watch Kansas State basketball or Florida State basketball, who's doing very well right now, ranked 22nd, and looking like they're going to make it to the NCAA tournament once again. Go check out college basketball. And listen, I'm not a big baseball fan, but there'll be plenty of baseball games on the big screen TVs at Ford's as well. Go check out your Tampa Bay Rays or go check out Matt's New York Mets.
Let's go Mets.
Oh, boy.
Pitchers and catchers just reported for fall spring training.
Yay. So excited.
Whoa.
Golf clap.
Yeah.
And the Masters coming up soon.
That's
fan,
Masters.
Go watch
the
Masters.
I would watch the Masters over baseball all day long.
All day long.
I would watch the Valspar Pro over the Masters.
I'll be there
all day long.
On the Saturday.
Is Tiger going to be in this year?
I'm not sure. He was last year, though.
Yeah.
So
no, that was exciting. I went last year for that.
I bet you Tiger has been to a Ford's Garage, too.
Oh, absolutely. Probably the one in Orlando. He lives over there.
He loves waitresses.
He's probably a big fan. Easy. We're not saying any of the waitresses at Ford's Garage would date Tiger Woods, but anyway. FordsGarageUSA.com, that's where you can find out all the locations. They have all their menus located on that website as well. And make sure when you stop in, you let them know Pewter Nation Podcast and thank them for sponsoring the Pewter Nation Podcast. And, you know, tell them thanks and that you appreciate it and you're here because you heard it on the Pewter Nation
and
podcast.
And keep tweeting out those picks. Those are awesome. We love that. I know Ford's Garage loves that. Take a picture of your food before you put it on Instagram. Tweet it out at Pewter Report, at Ford's Garage, and keep doing that. They love it. We love it.
And we're still waiting on somebody to finish off the nachos in one seating and send us a picture of that because we've got a Pewter Report koozie going their way.
Ooh, there we go.
And an autographed 8x10 picture of, I don't know, I've got some in my trunk still.
Okay.
I think I have a Jeremy Trueblood. I really do. I do. I do. When we cleaned out Jeremy the storage Trueblood. Locker a few years ago, I have a Jeremy Trueblood. I have, golly, like some no name off the defensive lineman.
I think we have a Josh Freeman left over.
I have a Barrett Rood signed cover, framed Pewter Report cover, still autographed by Barrett Rood. I've been trying to give that away for 5 years now.
Okay, so Buck fans, if you want an autographed, signed cover,
a Pewter Report large, framed, it's huge, right? It's huge. Yeah, it's a blown up cover.
If you pay
framed,
for shipping,
yes,
Mark Cook will send it to you.
Yes, I will.
Are we going to unload it right here?
Yeah, let's unload it right
this
now.
This is like Tradio almost.
It is like Tradio without the prank calls. But yeah, you gotta take a picture, go to Ford's, take a picture of your food, tweet it out, and hashtag Barrett Rood. And if you do that, we'll. Like, he's never been hashtagged before.
Right.
He played before Twitter, and since then, nobody cares. Although he's a linebacker coach at Nebraska now. But Barrett Rood, hashtag Barrett Rood, and we will put you in the drawing for the signed, autographed Pewter Report magazine cover signed by Barrett Rood. It'll look awesome in your man cave. Yeah. It's a great display.
Mark will give it to you for free. You pay for shipping. That's
you
it.
Guys spent a lot of money when you had that done at one time. I mean, you know, the framing on stuff like that's not cheap. So, I mean, the frame and the matting and all that's probably $100 value right there. So
there you go.
Anyway, all right. And Barrett Rood autograph does not decrease the value any. It may not increase it, but it doesn't decrease it. So you're going to get a $100 framing job anyway, regardless.
I think Jason Light's dad might be in on that. You know, he's a big Nebraska fan.
You could always just take the picture out and just put your kid's picture in there if you
that's
want.
True,
I mean, it's
yeah.
a hell of a frame. But anyway, all right, check it out. Go to Ford's Garage. Put that in there. Hashtag Barrett Rood, and we'll do a drawing for that in the next couple of weeks. If somebody's interested in that. All right, guys, we'll be back next week.
We should talk about Quan Alexander next week.
Who's that?
He's the middle linebacker coming off the ACL injury. That's
former
also
linebacker.
Gonna be...
He's going to walk, too.
Think so?
Buck's getting rid of him.
I know.
You know what? They've only got five guys on the roster right now, I believe.
Three of them are coming off of ACL tears.
Yeah. Yeah, and let's see. We're
or
switching,
I should say two.
And
but...
we're going to go to a 3-4. I wonder what they're going to do in the draft.
I wonder why they had Devin White as the Bucks' first-round pick at Pewter Report. I wonder what that was all about.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, hey, speaking of Pewter Report, my Fab Five comes out on Friday. Had an exclusive interview with Rojo, Ronald Jones.
RJ.
No, you got a hold of
I have RJ. To call him Rojo because I talked to him. You can still call him RJ or whatever you want, but I had to
I'm
call
dying
him Rojo.
To read this one now.
It's good,
I've been probably his biggest critic, man. I'm not really
talks about last
guy.
Year, talks about what's going to happen this year, and it's good stuff. So make sure you check out SR's Fab 5.
On Friday.
And we delve a little bit into free agency, take a look at the running back position, and so check that out on Friday.
What when's your next mock coming out?
It'll be after the Combine.
So later this month,
that'll
end of the month.
Well, first week of March.
Okay, that's right.
So we'll do that one in March. We'll have another one probably end of March, early April, and then the final one will be the week
right
of the draft. Yeah, so
Very
we do
good.
Five. So we're on coming up to number three, and then we'll have two more after that.
All righty. For Matt, the
producer
/ intern, Scott Reynolds, the boss, I'm Mark Cook. Sam, we'll see you next week for another edition of the Pewter Nation podcast.
Out.
Out.